While you're following along with the Law of Attraction, with Hacking Your Mind, and all of the other great episodes that we've had where guests have come on and talked about how they manage their goals, ethics, and dreams, well, now you can manage your own. We are giving away a free mind map and daily planner at our website, InnovarePodcast.com. Go ahead and check that out. Download your free mind map and daily planner while you listen to this episode to get some great ideas. What are you waiting for? Go there now. From the verb innovare, which means simply to innovate, to reform, or to change. But what is innovation? It's often tough to define, but we know it when we see it. It's a new idea, creative thoughts, new imaginations, methods, theories. It's bettering ourselves. But we take these actions often out of necessity. So what if we could harness the scrapper mentality, the hustler, the actions of those who are just trying to survive, and put it into everyday use? This is my passion project. I've attended some of the world's largest innovation conferences, developed the latest and greatest technology, and produced change within organizations who are built on and preach tradition. Now I'm here to help entrepreneurs and everyday individuals make small changes and establish a new normal through new methods, ideas, and standards to change your life forever. I'm Roy Edwards, and welcome to the Innovare Project.
I welcome you to Innovare. Yeah, this is where we innovate. This is the podcast where changes are made. If you're not growing, then you're dying. Innovation is the key to surviving. This is Innovare, where we ain't scared to make that change and create a new way. If you're ready to learn and sit back and just chill, it's about to get real. This is Innovare.
What's up, guys, and welcome into another episode of the Innovare Podcast. I am your host, Roy Edwards, and thanks for stopping on in. Guys, if this is your first time here, please like and subscribe. Leave us a little review. It helps us out. It helps us grow and continue this mission of changing people's mindset and helping people evolve and innovate into their best selves. So now that the housekeeping is out of the way, this week we got a pretty awesome conversation, a pretty awesome guest. His name is Nick Fuller. He studied sports psychology at West Virginia, and he has a master's from California University of PA in that same field. And we're going to have that conversation about the mind. We know that this is a big thing that people struggle with, both in the athletic world as well as the corporate world, and how to connect with people, how to build foundations of teamwork and cohesiveness. Nick is here to help us get grounded, how to take the first steps, and how to develop a soldier's mind, really, because Nick has worked with Army Rangers and some of the military's most elite in helping them prepare for battle. And he's going to walk us through how we can prepare our minds for the everyday world, for corporate America, for athletics, for bettering ourselves, and how we can take that first step. So let's get started. Nick Fuller studied sports psychology at West Virginia University and has a master's from the California University of Pennsylvania in that same field. Nick went on to work with the United States Army, working with Army Rangers, tankers, Apache, and Black Hawk pilots and infantrymen, helping to increase their resilience and become battle ready. Nick then took what he taught soldiers and now helps student athletes from many different sports increase their mental game to separate themselves from the competition as CEO of the Tactical Mind. Welcome into the Innovare Podcast, Nick Fuller. Nick Fuller, what's up, dude?
Roy, it's great to see you.
I know.
I have never heard of Jack Skellington until like 2 weeks ago when my son's buddy was like, oh, I'm going to be Jack Skellington for Halloween. So you and a three-year-old got that same thing going in common.
Yeah, I have the mask here and everything.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, I'm a super fan. No big deal.
I just started watching it yesterday. I'd never seen it.
Never?
Until now. Never.
What were you doing with your life before? Like, what was your, this is completely off topic, but I don't care. What was your Halloween go-to growing up?
I mean, I feel like it was the bare minimum, whatever would like work to get me candy. I would just like find something and be like, all right, this will work. Here's a staple. Here's a rubber band. And I'm going to go out and do this. Like, I don't know. I just bare minimum to get candy.
Wow. That was just, what about like movies? And did you watch Halloween movies?
I feel like Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I just watched Charlie Brown in the Great Pumpkin Patch.
That's an old school one. I didn't even. Yeah. Wow. That's
That I completely forgot about the Charlie Brown one. But yeah, Hocus right. Pocus, obviously, right? The Sanderson sisters.
Right.
But dude, Nightmare Before Christmas is right there with it, I feel like. At least in my right. household.
I'm watching it now, so I'm halfway through it. So
halfway through it, as in like you paused and like you turned it off and you're like,
oh, yeah, it was my kid's bedtime, so.
Oh wow. Well, when you wake him up, he's in for a treat. He's gonna learn about Jack Skeleton. So well, now that we have the Halloween out of the way, man, that's we could do a whole podcast on the childhood that you missed out on, but I don't know that my listeners would enjoy that one as much as they're going to enjoy this conversation about.
Yeah, that would be more like an props of nothing.
Yeah. So, dude, I don't know if you knew this about me, but so we went to college together, Nick and I did. And so I was studied sports psychology. I don't know if you knew that about me. So
for how long?
I have a minor in it.
Get out.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a minor in sports psychology, history. And then my major was communications. So,
okay.
Yeah, sports psych was, I have books on here. So what I studied when I was doing sports psych was how the athlete and how the mind works when going through like rehab or recovery. So that was like a lot of the stuff that I focused on, which I'm sure is like 101 type stuff, considering I had a minor in it. But so I've been looking forward to this conversation, man, is because you are a lot wiser on the subject than I, sir, with your master's degree and you majored in it. And I knew that you went on and worked with Army Rangers and stuff like that. So I've been really looking forward to this conversation. But before we dive into sports psych, who is Nick Birdman Fuller? And what's his backstory like?
Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to slip in.
I was going to drop
Birdman
it
at some point. Yeah. So I run the Tactical Mind, which is just helping athletes, like you talked about, conquering the mental game. And because if you talk to any athlete, you're like, oh, well, you know, how important is the mental side of your game? You right. know, I would say minimum, I'm going to hear it. Oh, it's at least 50% of your game. And it's sometimes a little bit harder to train. Like it's very easy to be like, oh, you know, you got to go out there and be mentally tough and all that stuff. But, and so it's easy for a coach to say, hey, go out there and be tough, be positive, be confident. But if you're the athlete and you're struggling with confidence or you're struggling with being positive that day or whatever, it's a lot harder to actually do that stuff. And, you know, growing up, I struggled with a lot of those same things that I just talked about. Like, for me, it was definitely confidence. And it was like, you know, why is it that my confidence was here one day and then gone the next? And, you know, I would wake up and my confidence would be sky high and I'd go out there, I'd feel great. And then nothing changed. And the next day I'd wake up and I'd be like looking under my bed and I'd be like, where did that confidence go that I had?
Right.
I was like, why did it just go away for no reason? And I wish I had known about sports psychology back then, because it would have just helped. I always just thought it like having confidence occurred by chance for me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that there were things to actually have it happen by choice. And so I would have loved to know more about that growing up. And so that's kind of why I got into the sports psychology field to begin with. Mainly to kind of learn about myself and why I never lived up to my own potential.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we played on a few intramural teams together. So
yeah, champion intramural teams. I'll add.
Yeah. So hopefully, as I progressed in the sports psychology field, you might have seen some changes in myself. But yeah. And so I worked for the Army for the last 7 years. And When I say it, hey, I did sport and performance psychology for the Army, people often are like, what does that have to do with soldiers, you know?
Yeah.
But really what it comes down to is the soldiers view themselves as tactical athletes.
Mm-hmm.
The same things that you need from a mental and emotional component when you're up at the plate and it's a full count or you're at the foul line or whatever sport you're playing. Those same mental processes, so whether it be focus, whether it be mindfulness, whether it be your ability to have poise under pressure, whether it's to have confidence or whether you need to be more aggressive in those situations, you know, soldiers need those exact same skills when they're overseas in a combat deployment environment. They need confidence. They need to be able to have poise. They need to be able to relax themselves. They need to be able to focus even after they've made a critical error, things of that nature. So I worked for the Army for 7 years, and then my wife and I moved up to Pennsylvania, and I started the Tactical Mind about a year and a half ago, and just been trying to get that off and running.
So what sports, I don't know that we've ever had this full conversation, is take a step back for me one, but we never really talked about what you played growing up. So like, what type of sports did you play growing up?
Right. So I played a bunch of different sports. I would say the sport that I played the longest, and in high school was lacrosse.
Yeah.
And then I dabbled with some other sports here and there, but lacrosse was my main sport. And I think, didn't you play lacrosse?
Yeah. I played for West Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, for the club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I played lacrosse. I was a tech. I was on the X spot most of the time.
Me too.
And I vividly remember, like, if you were like, hey, Nick, why did you get into sports psych? I can recall the game where I was, the moment where I was like, oh my God, I need sports psychology in my life. It was like the district, it was a district championship game. It was freezing cold out. And I had made one horrible pass. And then immediately following that horrible pass, I got passed the ball to me later on, like one play later, and I totally whiffed on it.
Mm.
And then my confidence was just like gone. And I was just like praying for the coach to take me out. And that was like, I still remember that game like so vividly. And I was like, man, I would do anything to go back there now with a little bit more.
With the mind you have now.
Yeah. And relive that game. But then I played volleyball from time to time, and I was pretty bad at that. My nickname on the team was the tuna, because I spent so much time in the net.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But no, I love playing volleyball still to this day. Whenever I can find a rec league, I go out there and play some volleyball.
Yeah. You're a tall guy.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like 5'10", so volleyball never really served me well. I could never jump high enough to get it, you know, like do anything near the net. So it was never.
Are you saying 5'10" with shoes on?
So in college, I wore boots. I wore those either Nike Boings. I don't know if you guys remember Nike Boings, but I wore Nike Boings to make myself taller. And then I wore Timberlands a lot to make myself taller. So I was always wearing shoes that had, you know, so I'm 5'10", but if Tinder was around in college, I would have been 6 foot. So, you know, I'm 5'10" though. So, yeah, but I feel like everybody who's ever played a sport has those same games. Like I have games where we went to regionals. It's like one step before states in Virginia. And so like we went through the district tournament, made it onto the regional tournament, and we were up, and then our team fell apart. And it's just that thing that sticks in your mind to say, man, if I knew what I knew now, maybe it would have turned out differently, you know, or maybe certain things would have gone a different way. Maybe then, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't know. It's hard to look at the past with a future's mind, right? That whole revisionist history stuff. But through that, you've talked a lot about, you know, the mental strength through your own journey, right? And so that was sports in high school. And so you said that I guess lack of mental strength or what you discovered to be certain times of lack of mental strength. So you knew going into college that you wanted to study the mind, or that was, it became when you got in there and started taking general courses and looking around that this was it.
Yeah, no, from day one, I was a sports psych major.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a great point that you bring up, but every single person has those games where they had a mental error, you know, and there's not always, if you don't know about sports psychology, it's hard to sometimes put a name to what happened to you on the field or on the court. And what we know is all of these things are trainable. So whether it be your ability to have, you know, self-regulate your emotions, whether it be to be more self-aware and to tune into the negative thoughts that are clouding, like that are just so loud in your mind, it's trainable to quiet those thoughts. All this stuff is trainable when, you know, you and I playing sports, I don't know how much we thought we could actually work on the mental game.
Yeah.
I think most of our coaches, I'm willing to bet even today, most of the coaches put, when you look at a practice, 99% of it is training the physical and technical side.
Yeah. So I realized, and I remember when I first started to realize that my mind was, if I was going to make it in sports, and I'm not saying that I was some great athlete or anything like that. I was a 4-year letter in high school and played I varsityed in fall sport on two different teams. So I played on the golf team and the football team my senior year at the same time. So I was a decent athlete, but the only reason why I was able to do any of that, was because my mind. I'm 5'10". I was, you know, I'm 165 pounds. I'm soaking wet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not this like huge brute of an athlete, but I was taught at a young age by my father, who my dad was a good athlete. So he played football at Ole Miss, and my little brother was actually a really good athlete too. He played college basketball. And so I was surrounded by athletes, but I used my mind as my biggest weapon. Like, where other people would rely on their physical abilities, I would rely on my mind to say, okay, I can do this to try and, you know, give myself an advantage, or I can do X, Y, or Z. And if I was having a bad mental game, then I wasn't just an average athlete. I was a terrible athlete, mm-hmm. You know, like I would drop. So I definitely had games where I didn't do anything, you know, and then I had other games where I would, you know, light it up. And it was really because we would look at things and we'd say, okay, this person is better than me. How can I outsmart them? And once I can't outsmart them, then I'm screwed, right? And so what you're doing is you're taking the mental aspect and putting into people who either maybe they do or they don't have the physical ability already. But I assume that working hard, somebody, I guess it's Emmett Smith, right, who said, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, right? But if we can teach talent to work hard and teach them the mental game, which that's where we get into like Army Rangers and stuff like that. Those guys are like physical freaks, right? And they train all the damn time. So for people who don't know, Army Rangers, and I'm going to look like an idiot if I'm wrong, but Army Rangers are the equivalent of like the Navy SEALs, but for the Army, right?
Yeah, more or less.
They're like the special ops guys, right?
Yeah, they're categorized in the special forces area, yeah.
And so those guys have to meet certain physical, right? They got to do like runs. Is there like physical things that they have to go through in order to become those ranks?
Yeah, that's definitely one component of it. Yeah. You know, I think just to even become an Army Ranger, there's a 3-tiered school that mm-hmm. you have to be able to pass every phase along the way. And yeah, it's definitely very physical, but yeah, like you said though, it's not just like the example I always give is, You know how in college football they do the star ranking. It's you're 3-star recruit, 4-star recruit, 5-star recruit. Well, you know, growing in high school, there's definitely some of those 5-star recruits who just have a physical, natural talent that can get them to be dominant in that high school level. But then what happens when an athlete goes to an Alabama or an Ole Miss or whatever, and all of a sudden all of the players around them and all of the players that are playing against have those same physical skills,
right?
They have those same genetic gifts that you were born with. Like, well, you're going to see the people who have mental toughness and can harness mental and emotional strength, they're going to succeed. And we see it every time, every season, there's 4- and 5-star recruits who get less and less playing time as the season goes on. And then eventually they transfer out, and their career plateaus. Well, why is it? Well, their physical skills, they relied on those for so long, mm-hmm. but you know, if I were to ask you, you know, talk about the best athletes in the world that, you know, odds are you're not going to, if you created a list of 10 things, I'm willing to bet that the majority of the things on that list aren't going to be physical characteristics. It's going to be things like grit. It's going to be things like drive. It's going to be things like poise. It's going to be things like great communication, things like that. And those aren't necessarily the physical and technical skills that we see. It's very easy to see the physical and technical skills. It's harder to see the mental and emotional component though, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into that a little bit with your time in the military or working with the military. And so when you were working with these guys who are, I mean, that's what they do, right? It's not like they go home at 5 and, you know, wake up the next day and they're like, hey, let's, what do we want to do today? You know, that's a lifestyle, right? I mean, they eat, sleep, breathe that stuff, and they're there. They don't go home a lot of the time if you're talking about if they're overseas or at camp or whatever, right? So what are some of the things that you took? Obviously, you studied this and you have PhD and you know, you had read about it. But what were some of the things that you took and learned from your time and working with the military?
Great question. And so first, first and foremost, they do not work a 9 to 5.
Right.
Which is, and like, I give, now that I have kids of my own too, like I give military spouses so much credit. Like if you don't have kids, I don't feel like you understand how much work that they have to put in, like, especially when they go overseas for 9 months. Like I cannot imagine if my spouse left me for 9 months with two kids. Yeah. Like, so I give them a ton of credit. But so yeah, let's more along the lines of like, what have I learned or what have I picked up and what traits have they used? And we could take this conversation in so many different routes, but I would just say I'm very impressed with their willingness to learn and dive in about the mental game. Because, you know, you're dealing with these macho soldiers who are infantrymen, they're pilots, whatever they, you know. And I would say the majority of the soldiers, they're thirsty for more of this information. They're like, yeah, how do I get more of this confidence? How do I get more of a growth mindset? How do I get more of the ability to have optimism when we're overseas? Because if you're overseas for 9 months or a year, your emotions are going to be a roller coaster. And some days it's just going to suck. Some days are going to be better than the other. So how do you develop more optimism over the course of 12 months? Because optimism it's a skill. We can learn to have more optimism. And so just their willingness to dive in to these skills, you know, resilience training and mental toughness, and just, there's this, you know, anytime I go into a class, there's always a stigma where they're like, all right, here comes the sunshine and rainbows and unicorns. And within a few minutes, they're like, okay, this guy knows his stuff. This is not about just group hugs. And I think in COVID, I think group hugs are definitely frowned upon nowadays. But
yeah, no more group hugs, right?
No, right. So, but just, yeah, their willingness to dive in and know that the next frontier of elite soldiers, elite athletes is the mind. Because, you know, what I tell athletes now, especially is I truly believe that the next frontier of elite performance is that mental and emotional piece. Because from a biomechanical standpoint, we know exactly if we want to increase an athlete's 100 meter time, we know exactly what we need to do from a muscular standpoint to, and a cardiovascular standpoint to increase, to decrease that time by a second or 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. We know exactly how to create physical specimens. And so again, what happens if everybody has the same access to the best training in the world? Well, the next frontier is going to be that mental and emotional piece. And I think that works not only for athletes, but that's definitely true for soldiers. And I think that's also very true for the corporate side as well.
When you say that you went into a room and so how do you open up to a room full of soldiers when they do think that, okay, here comes the guy who it tells me that I need to work on tapping into my emotional skills? You know, how do you open up a room full of guys that are trained to kill like that? A lot mm-hmm. of infantrymen, that's what they do. They're dropped behind the lines and they seek out the enemy and eliminate it. Right. So
right.
How do you, and a lot of them are told to put their emotions aside, that, you know, there's a lot of different sayings in the military that I won't repeat that are talk about the emotional side and how to get it out of your head. And, but how do you tap into that to say you do need your emotional side? Like, how do you capture that audience to start out with?
Yeah. I mean, and first, that's a myth, this to say like, hey, I'm going to be void of emotions. I'm going to get rid of my emotions. Nobody can do that. Like,
yeah,
you're not, if you don't have emotions, you're not human. You're a robot.
Right.
And it, so it's like, yeah, you're going to experience anger, whether you're overseas or whether you're on a basketball court. Anger is going to come up. Frustration is going to come up. Stress and anxiety is going to come up. Pride is going to come up. All these emotions are going to come up. It's effectively utilizing those emotions to work for you rather than against you. And now to get back to your question of like, how do you, so yeah, I don't know. I think one, it's just not acting like I wear the uniform,
right?
And that I'm an expert on what it's like to be overseas. I think that you'd lose credibility right away.
Yeah.
But I just think inherently, if you can be a good instructor, that's half the battle. Like I remember one of my mentors, I had like, it was like, I was like a month or two on the job. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, the group just wasn't really interested in the material. Like they weren't a good group. And he was like, well, be better.
Right.
And I was like, what? Like it kind of hurt a little bit at first. He's like, well, just be better. And I was like, he's like, what we teach is really interesting, is really exciting. Like who doesn't want to have more mental toughness, more resilience? Like this is all things that people want to like experience more of. And so if they're not connecting to it, it's like, be better.
Yeah. So how can people have more mental toughness and be more resilient?
I mean, how much time do you have?
Give me the starting points.
Yeah, let's start it from the beginning. And the biggest thing that I believe contributes to your mental side is self-awareness, being tuned in to the thoughts that we're having, being tuned into the emotions that are going on inside of us. You know, if I were to ask you how many thoughts or how many words do you think we say to ourselves each and every minute?
Oh man, I don't know, thousands probably.
Okay. Yeah. So it's funny. Whenever I ask that question, I get a ton of different answers. Rarely do I hear thousands, but that's good though. Like, so that's kind of getting at the point of, yes, we think to ourselves a lot. Yeah. What the research shows is we think on average 300 to 700 words per minute.
Oh,
and
wow.
As we get under pressure or in an intense situation, that number goes up. And then my follow-up question would be like, of those, like, let's just call it maybe 500 words per minute.
Mm-hmm.
What percent would you say that you are aware of those thoughts?
Oh man, 10%, I'll say.
Yeah, like that's typically what I find. And even for me, I would say I work on this stuff every single day. And I would say I'm probably at 10 to 20% on a good day, maybe a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But so what's that mean? 90% of the time, you're just being pulled by your thoughts this way or that way, whether it's productive or it's counterproductive for you in those moments, whether it's positive or negative for you in those moments. And so it's very hard to become a master of your own mind if you're not even aware of what's going on up here. And the problem with that is we might be having thoughts and they're controlling our confidence. They're controlling our motivation. They're controlling how stressed we are. But we're not even aware that we're having those thoughts.
Yeah.
But they're happening and they're having an impact on our performance.
And so how do we change those thoughts? Or
yeah,
can we?
It's hard, right? And you know, let's just go with a basic example. You know, you're in the DC area, and
yeah.
I'm sure you drive every now and then, and there's some not so good drivers.
It's the best traffic in the world, babe.
Yeah. So let's say, you know, you're cruising the left lane and somebody just swerves right into your lane and no turn signal and you have to slam on your brakes.
Those Maryland drivers.
What's the first thought that comes to your mind? Like, you need to learn how to there's probably expletives. I don't know if you're, if you have an E. I don't know.
Depends if the kids are in the car, right? On how many expletives I release.
Right. And so I'm not going to say what, you know, probably will come out because I don't know what censorship you have on the podcast, but you know, that I would say that first thought is very hard to control.
Yeah.
Like that's an automatic response. But I would say that we do have more power and more control in maybe that second, third, fourth thought. And so when I work with athletes now, I think there's a lot of magic in being able to recognize and tap into your thinking and to tap into that second, third thought. Because if it's counterproductive for you in that nature, hey, the quicker I can turn off that negative thinking, the quicker I can get back, I can get my head back in the game.
Hmm. And so are there tactics to do that? Like, so for instance, as I've gotten older, I still play sports, right? I still play intramural, it's like pickup stuff, right? And so I don't know if it's because I'm older now, but, or I'm more in touch with like emotions, I guess, as an adult, but I get anxiety now when I'm playing sports, right? And I don't know if it's I'm dehydrated or what, but, and so I ground myself. So I'll look for all the five senses, right? I'll say something I can see, something I can smell, something I can, et cetera, right? So are there ways that you teach to get people away from that initial reaction that gets them back grounded into what it is that's going on?
Yeah. And I love that you talked about grounding. This is like, I think where your sports psych minor comes back into play. And,
yeah.
I
got more buzzwords for you, buddy.
I'm sure you know about flow state. Right?
I was about to say flow. Yep.
I had a buddy who worked with snipers and he actually taught that grounding technique that you just used, because what does that do? That gets you out of your head. Mm-hmm. And whether you're thinking about the pressures of hitting the shot, or you're bored because you're often out there for hours at a time. So how do you bring yourself back to the right here, right now, the present moment? Well, you can ground yourself by saying, this is three things that I hear right now, three things that I see right now, three things that I can feel right now. And that just grounds you and gets you out of your head in that moment. Every athlete and every soldier is different. I'll just talk about athletes at the current moment though. But one of the things that we have like a, almost like, sometimes like a greatest hit in our minds. So if we make a mistake, my mind will immediately go to like, you don't belong out here. Mm-hmm. Your coaches think that you're a failure. And it's recognizing them, like trying to first get them to be aware of what is on that greatest hit soundtrack. What does it sound like when I go negative on myself? And then if we can be aware of, hey, I'm having these negative thoughts are coming about, then we can do something to interrupt that thinking. We can do something to maybe replace that thinking. Or, you know, there's several different techniques, and it's hard because, you know, I always give this analogy. So Emily, you know, Emily,
your wife,
she's my wife, yep. Who, you know, also went to West Virginia, and she's in the medical field. And if she's in the operating room and the patient's blood pressure starts decreasing, she knows that she can give 50 cc's of this drug to bring the blood pressure back up. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about psychology in the mind, you know, it's very hard. Like I can't give Roy Edwards 50 cc's of optimism. Right. And then all of a sudden you're ready to go out and be great on the field again. Like, you know, there's one technique that works for you. There's another technique that works for another person. It's a lot of trial and error, but the first thing that I think would work for any single person is finding out being more in tune to your thoughts. And because our thoughts then make up our beliefs about ourselves. And so that's a little bit harder to change. If I have a belief that's, you know, we like to think of ourselves like, oh, like I have a belief that people are good or whatever, like our beliefs should be good, but more time, like there's times that we have beliefs that are bad. They're bad beliefs that we don't want to have. But maybe a belief is like, I'm not worthy. Mm-hmm. And so if we have that belief of I'm not worthy, it would make sense then that a lot of my thoughts confirm this belief of I'm not worthy or I don't have what it takes. And so maybe it's recognizing thoughts and change. It might be as simple as just being able to increase your self-awareness and bring I'm aware of my thoughts 10% of the time, and it's bringing it up to 50% of the time or whatever. But then sometimes it's changing the belief.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit harder.
So you talked about first initial thoughts, right? You have differing opinions that I've heard is you have to let yourself be upset, right? Something has happened. It's okay to be upset, but for how long is it okay to get upset? Like how are you allowed to like be upset for 5 minutes and then you have to turn it off? Is that healthy? Or is it more healthy to cry it out? Like how do you balance healthy with managing your emotions versus getting back into reality or grounding yourself?
Yeah. I think back to one of, I've got a soccer player who, who I work with quite a lot. And one of the things that he's trying to work on is to have more of that self-regulation where he can manage his emotions. In his previous game, he had a yellow card, because him and this other player were kind of going back and forth all game. And, you know, first time they went back and forth, maybe frustration was like a 3 out of 10, right?
Yeah.
And then they throw a few more elbows at each other. It starts, that frustration keeps increasing a little bit. And now the game is going on. And in his mind, do you think he's thinking about the play at hand?
Yeah, absolutely not.
And what he needs to be doing? Or what do you think he's thinking about?
That I need to elbow this guy because he elbowed me a couple plays earlier.
Yeah, how do I get back at this guy? And there's no way that I'm going to let number 17 get the best of me.
Right.
So, and now his frustration's at a 10 out of 10. It's so hard. And we can, it's easier to self-regulate when our emotions are a 4 out of 10 or 5 out of 10. It's a hell of a lot harder to regulate those emotions when we're at 35 out of 10, you know?
Yeah.
And so his focus that whole time was not even at the task at hand, but it was, how do I get even?
Right.
And so what I've been working on him with is, how do we get back? How do we quickly regulate those emotions? And how do we turn our focus back to what's important now? And number 17 or whatever number I said earlier,
right. Yeah.
That's not what's important now in those moments. And so to go back to your question, I think post game, sure. Let it suck for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Learn from it. And how do you handle failures and setbacks? Because, you know, I think that's part of what I teach as well. You know, setbacks and failures are part of life. And some people handle them better than others. So maybe during post game, you can sit with those emotions longer. But my belief is, I would say, during performance, and whether that be on the field, on the battlefield, or in the boardroom, you would want to regulate those emotions to get whatever you have to do to get your head back in the game.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. You mentioned boardroom there. So mm-hmm. I would assume a good majority of the people who are listening to this podcast aren't elite athletes. Maybe they are. I don't know. But let's talk about that boardroom. Let's talk about corporate America. And you talk about corporate athletes. So first, what is a corporate athlete?
Yeah. What I believe is a corporate athlete is, I'm going to throw out an Olympian. You tell me if you've ever heard of him. Anton Apollo Ono.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the speed skater, right?
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast that he was on, and he was saying, you know, so he retired from speed skating, maybe at the last Olympics, I think. And now he went to Dancing with the Stars, but then he does a lot of VC stuff. And he was just talking about how former elite athletes have really found success transferring over to the business world. And the host was like, well, why do you think that? And he was like, well, what are the characteristics that get you to be an elite athlete? It's grit. It's motivation. It's drive. It's handling setbacks. It's having confidence. It's being able to be an effective team player. Those are all characteristics that will have you be successful in your job, in the boardroom, wherever you're working. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And so what I feel are corporate athletes is, how do we train the same mindsets that elite athletes, elite special operators use to be successful in their field of performance? And how do we train those mindsets to be in the corporate world? And I just think it stems from a mindset. And how do you handle, I keep going back to setbacks, because I think any job that you have, you're going to face adversity. You're going to face setbacks.
Right.
And how do you handle that? How do you view effort? How do you view challenges? There's going to be some people that shy away from challenges. There's going to be other people that take challenges head on. Why is it that some people avoid challenges?
Right.
Well, maybe it's that they believe that they only have so much skill and they don't want to see, they don't want to have other people see that they're not the best thing since sliced bread. They're not God's gift to accounting or whatever it is, you know? Right. And so they avoid challenges, and maybe they hear feedback and they're that person that shakes their head north and south, you know, and they're just waiting for you to shut up because right. they don't care about the feedback. And then there's other people that dive into the feedback. And so it starts with the mindset, I think, and then everything we can talk about everything else. Cause I think if you're delivering a speech to the COO and you get thrown a tough question, how do you maintain what's going on in here? So you can slow down the meeting in your mind, not necessarily what's happening around you, but everything starts slowing down for you rather than speeding up. I think when it starts speeding up, that's when you get flustered. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, my heart's pounding. And you're like, oh, well, my heart's pounding because I'm not ready.
Right.
And then all of that stuff's going on, and that's probably not effective in that moment. And so there's such a correlation between what I do for athletes and how it can then translate to the boardroom.
So you talk a lot about also celebrating success and having cohesive teams, right? Because mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy. Well, I shouldn't say it's easy. It's easier to translate these messages to an individual and to say, you need to have more positive think. You need to get inside your own head and deal with your own emotions and control them. But what about if we're handling a team of individuals and now there's 5, 10, 20 people, 20 different sets of emotions that we need to herd the cats in the same direction? So I know you deal with that as well. So what's the first step in that process?
Yeah. And I know we had talked a little bit too offline about like, and how is this working in a remote yeah. world now? Again, I think there's definitely more than one way to build a cohesive team. And, you know, I can give my answer and I will in a second, but then another person is going to give another answer. Mm-hmm. I think it all stems from trust though. That's the first ingredient is if I don't have trust in the organization, in my leadership team, well then odds are I'm not going to feel willing to take risks because if I fail at that risk, you're going to judge me. You're going to criticize me. You're going to think that I don't belong here. And so I really think it stems from trust. And then you're allowed to argue your ideas and take risks and everything else. But then one other thing of how do we build cohesive teams? I'm going to probably take 2 or 3 minutes and I'm going to go over what my favorite skill is. And I actually, I learned this from my time at the from working with the Army and the resilience program out of UPenn. They have this skill called ACR, which stands for active constructive responding. And I'm going to teach it to you, Roy, real quick, because I think it's the greatest skill anybody can learn for an office place or for relationships or whatever. And so it's ACR. This is all about how do you respond when somebody shares good news to you? Hmm. And when I first learned about this skill, I was like, well, I probably got this skill. I'm a happy guy. I got a lot of friends. I feel like I'm. And then as they were going over this, I was like, oh, I actually suck at this skill. And what I found is a lot of people have a lot of room to be better at this skill of ACR. And so again, ACR is how do you respond when somebody brings you good news? And I could spend a half hour teaching this. I'm going to teach it to you in 2 minutes. So the first thing is, so let's say, you know, Roy, you come to me and you say, hey, Nick, guess what? I just got a new dog. I just rescued a new dog. That's some good news, right?
Yeah.
And maybe this happens over Zoom, like or over Teams, and it's right before the meeting gets started. And it's very hard to sometimes build a relationship over Zoom. Well, the first way that we tend to respond, and this is actually where I spend a lot of my time, I would just be like, cool, man, happy for you. And then you might be like, yeah, it was like half an Australian Shepherd and half Boxer. We love it. And I'd be like, cool. Like, how are you feeling after that? Like, are you kind of wanting a little bit more
yeah.
maybe from
right.
From
yeah. Maybe ask me a couple more questions or whatever. Right. Yeah.
yeah. And you're like, all right, cool. This guy clearly doesn't care about about me or this good, but it's important news to you. And like, I just think back to like, Emily would come home from the hospital and she, you know, it's a hospital. There's not many great things that happen at a hospital, but every now and then she'd have like a great thing that happened to her. And I would have the TV on or whatever. And I'd just be like, oh yeah, cool. That's not building a relationship. And that's not what Emily signed up for, you know? And so that's passive constructive responding. Like, we're giving them a little bit of love, but not a lot. So then the next one is, you're like, hey Nick, guess what? I just rescued a dog. And then I go, well, you know what? I was just watching Tiger King and it inspired me to get a tiger. Like, I don't know why I gave a country draw when I said that, right? Too. I don't know, but,
you've been living in Georgia for too long.
Yeah, apparently. And that's like one upping like your good news.
Right.
And that's not going to build it. Cause like, you were really excited to share your good news. And I just hijacked your good news to one up you. And nobody ever loves talking to the one upper. And so that's another way that we can respond to somebody's good news. There's another one that we can do, which is you bring a negative focus to their good news. So you're like, hey, I just rescued a dog. And I say, well, Roy, don't you have like four kids? Like, that a dog takes a lot of time. And plus, you said it was a rescue. Like, you don't know what the past history of that dog was. You're going to bring a dog that has a rough history around a newborn. Yeah. What am I doing there? I'm taking, like, are you feeling great about your good news after leaving that conversation? You're like, oh, I got to go learn how to take this dog back. and that's not going to build the relationship. And I just think in the corporate world, like, how many times does somebody come up to you? Like, if it's a subordinate, they come up to you and they just want to share something that happened good in their lives. And, you know, I would say it's easier to find negative things that happen in your life too. And so for an employee to finally be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go tell Roy, like, I'm really excited that my family's taking a weekend trip to Vermont to see the leaves change. And then you're just like on your phone, like, oh yeah, cool. Happy. You'll have to let me know how that goes. Like,
yeah.
Is that employee going to feel like he's a valued member of the team? Are they going to feel like you got their back? And then are they more or less likely to come to you when there's actually a problem in the office,
right?
Like, or with an account? Probably not. And so then obviously, what does it look like? What does the gold state, like, what does it look like if I'm actually using ACR? Well, if you say, hey, Nick, guess what? I just got, my family just rescued a dog. I'm like, oh, well, what kind of dog was it? Oh man, that's great. What do the kids think about the dog? And you're like, oh my God, they're over the moon with Snuffles. I was like, oh, you named them Snuffles? Like, and how much longer does this conversation take than any of the other ones?
Right.
And it's just doing a little bit. And I'll tell you what, anytime I teach a skill, like, and soldiers, they get a hoot out of this skill. Like, they'll come back the next day and be like, Nick, dog, like, that was amazing. Like, my wife had never seen, like, she's never seen anything like this before. Like, we had a great conversation. Like, one thing, like, we conversated for a half hour without any interruptions. Like, it was great. And so I just think I've seen this work in my own relationship. I've seen it work in the military. I've seen it work in corporate America as well. Just building relationships, building a cohesive environment. And it's a great skill.
Nice. Well, so how can people learn more about the tactical mind and how can people get in touch with you?
I would love that. The easiest way is going to thetacticalmindllc.com. You can hit me up. You can find multiple ways to reach me on the website. I'm on Instagram at The Tactical Mind. I'm trying to get better at posting. I'm not great at it, but you know, we all have our flaws as a business owner.
That's awesome. Dude, thank you so much for coming on. And it's great to see you. It's great to catch up. It's been too long. Then maybe, and I know that the whole COVID stuff has stopped us from fist bumping in public. Being in Virginia and you being in, you're still in Georgia, right?
No, I moved up to central Pennsylvania.
I feel so awful now. No, not knowing that you are now in Pennsylvania. That is now I'm officially a shitty friend for not knowing. Man, when did you move up to Pennsylvania?
Like a year and a half ago.
Dude, don't tell me this. Oh God.
It's fine.
All right. Well, it's not fine. I'll make it up for you.
I mean, I feel like you made it up by having me on the podcast. Okay. It was great.
Well, good. I'm glad you had fun, man. And so did I. I like I said at the beginning of this, I love this stuff. I only got a minor in it, so I just know buzzwords is basically what that means. So I'm glad that you came on to teach me some knowledge and to drop some bombs, because that was awesome, dude. That was some great stuff. So I appreciate you, man. And guys, please reach out to Nick. He's the man. He's look how friendly that face is. He's just a beautiful human being. So reach out to him. And thanks again, Nick. I appreciate you, buddy.
All right, Roy. Thanks.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the Innovare Podcast. You can listen to all episodes at InnovarePodcast.com, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever your podcasts are found. If you enjoy watching podcasts, check us out on YouTube for a visual behind-the-scenes look at all Innovare Podcast episodes. We have recently released a community of entrepreneurs. Find us on Facebook at Innovare Mindset. That's Innovare Mindset, to join the private group of entrepreneurs changing the world. Until next time, guys, see ya.